Today, a return visit from Nicholas Johnson. An Iowa City native, he has worked on both coasts and served under three presidential administrations, most well known as a federal communications commissioner under the Johnson administration, where he advocated for public media, including stations like this. Back in Iowa City, he has served on the school board and continues to write on many subjects. You can find his work on his websites at columnsofdemocracy.com, fromdctoiowa.blogspot.com with numeral 2, and nicholasjohnson.org. In an earlier talk, he spoke with us about his book, Columns of Democracy. Today, he's going to tell us about something completely different, well, maybe not completely unrelated, rethinking electrical vehicles. As he wrote, it involves the environment, consumer spending, public policy, and the consequences of, oh, look at the squirrel. I want one, too. So welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Holly. Good to be back with you.
I note you've got an impressive resume, but with your interest in all the notes that you sent me on electric vehicles, I'm wondering if you've neglected to tell us that you may have a degree in electrical engineering.
No, I do not, although, but there's a lot that we can confront here that I have had some experience with. The reason why this is important to our listeners is that during the next 15 years, every American family is going to have to make a decision whether to buy or not to buy an electric vehicle. And by the end of this program, I think they'll understand why I say that. And moreover, not only is this a personal decision, but the role of electric vehicles is a major part of the transportation infrastructure that President Biden is working on, and our efforts to deal with global warming and climate change as well. So what I'd like to do, to the extent we can get it done in the time we have, is to talk about three things. First, what is it we're really trying to accomplish with what are called EVs, electric vehicles? Secondly, what are the individuals who are buying electric vehicles now? What are the costs, the benefits, what are the conveniences and inconveniences of an EV? And finally, what are the EV's future? So in terms of the time frames, I was originally shocked to find out that General Motors has said that sometime in the 2030 time frame, they're not going to be manufacturing any internal combustion engines with gasoline. And auto companies all around the world, it's kind of like developing vaccines at warp speed. They're working at warp speed to come up with the models that will take a profitable share of this market. So what are the things holding us back or that we need to consider? Well, for one thing, we're really at the beginning, which is why it's hard to predict where we're going to end up. Only 1% of new car sales are now for EVs. And in addition to that, something that the wealthy who talk about electric vehicle policy may not be aware of is that while they are comfortable buying a new car every 3 years or so, last year, Americans bought three times more used cars than new cars. So buying any kind of a new car, let alone an electric one, is something that at the present time is, we're talking about 25% of the population. Beyond that, we now have 280 million gas cars on the road. So it's going to take a long time for those to be removed. We drive our cars a long time. The median age now is 10 years. Some people are driving 20-year-old cars. So that's going to take a while. And so the conclusion with regard to the time frame is that probably if there is to be a meaningful impact, it's going to be the second half of the 21st century, not the first. Now, I'd like to say a word about systems analysis because it's very relevant here and it's not widely taught or talked about. And it's illustrated with a wonderful story of a hotel that had what it described as an elevator problem. And what was the problem? Well, the people in the hotel, their customers, were complaining about slow elevators. But nobody with the company that owned the hotel could come up with a solution. None of the elevator companies could. They hired a systems analysis. And he said, what's your problem? And they say, well, it's the elevators. They're too slow. And you say, well, is that really the problem? Well, how'd this come to your attention? Well, people are complaining about slow elevators. He said, well, that's your problem. Your problem is not the elevators. Your problem is the complaints. So he went off and thought about it and came back and proposed, and they installed a full-length mirror at every spot on every floor where the elevators stopped. And people would come to the elevator and admire themselves in the mirror and turn around and admire from the other angle. And so, and the elevator came before they'd even stopped admiring themselves. And all the complaints disappeared. And so systems analysis helps to find what is the real problem that you're dealing with. And we've got that here. Are we just trying to promote electric vehicle sales as a matter of public policy, or is what we're really trying to do reduce greenhouse gas emissions from transporting humans? And if it's the latter, if we're just trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, there are other things we can do, either instead of electric vehicles or in addition to electric vehicles, like encourage people to walk or bicycle, by locating businesses where people work closer to where housing is located, grocery stores closer, and so forth, and increasing the availability of public transportation to something closer to what's available to those living in Europe or Japan. And secondly, it wouldn't hurt to continue doing work trying to develop more fuel-efficient internal combustion engines, since they're still going to be being sold well into the 2030s and beyond, seeing what more we can do with electric and gas hybrids and programs to buy gas guzzlers and get those folks an electric vehicle. A final consideration on this part of our discussion is that unless we're getting the electricity for these vehicles, for charging their batteries, unless we're getting it from renewable sources, we're just substituting emissions from coal-fired power plants. We're increasing them in order to reduce the emissions from tailpipes. And nationally, only about 20% of our electricity is now produced by renewables. Iowa's much higher than other states, but even Iowa is 42% renewable. And while we can be proud of that, that doesn't exactly solve the problem as wonderful as it is. So that's my take on the first one, which is what are we trying to accomplish and why and how long may it take?
I'm going to jump in here because you're anticipating a number of my questions, and maybe you'd care to comment now, and then we can go to the next steps. And if we run out of time, we'll do a part two of this talk, if that's okay with you. You talk about, of course, the need to convince people to buy these cars and, of course, the overwhelming need to drastically reduce greenhouse gas emissions. I'm wondering, first, the cost of these cars and whether or not public policy can step in to not only provide incentives, but to enable people to be able to afford to trade in or purchase electric vehicles. You also mention the problem of renewable energy, and I know that the lithium batteries and the type of batteries that cars have to use are also problematic in terms of production at this time. And I don't know if there's been any development in that regard in terms of a more sustainable mode of battery production.
Well, in terms of cost, as I say, I don't think I've ever bought a new car, and only about 25% of the people bought new cars last year at all. So I think there are an awful lot of people who are not really going to be in the market, given the present prices, which range at the low end, say maybe $30,000, although you're usually that's going to end up coming up above $40,000 by the time you actually get the car. But say $30,000 or $40,000 up to $100,000 and more. So that is a consideration. And it's not irrelevant to consider that you're lugging around about a half a ton of batteries, which obviously reduces the mileage that you get and so forth. And that if you end up having to replace a battery, their cost is sort of $5,000 to $15,000. And then you have to bear in mind that this electricity is not free. You're still going to be paying an electric bill. Another consideration is what you said about the lithium supply. I think if we're really thinking of having billions of people driving around lithium batteries and then replacing them every 10 years or so, we're going to need a humongous supply of lithium. And I'm not sure it's available at a reasonable cost.
That brings me to jump in one more time. You're talking about this enormous cost, and I'm thinking public transportation. Do you foresee an effort to provide increased and drastically increased efforts toward public transportation? Because it strikes me that they're not going to be able to maintain this kind of billions of car lifestyle. Like you had mentioned, places in Europe and other parts of the world, and even some parts of the United States where we do have more of an infrastructure of public transportation. Do you foresee more public policy really enhancing those options?
I don't know. There's going to be pressure against it. We once had nothing like what Europe and Japan have, but we had rail, we had trolley cars, we had public transportation. But then the auto industry kind of took over that segment of public policy, and you know the story about General Motors buying up the railway tracks in L.A. and installing dealers to sell cars. And we've got billions invested in auto manufacturing and highway construction and maintenance, the interstate highway system, one of the world's largest public building projects, and mechanics and filling stations and whatever. So there's enormous political pressure and a lot of money from campaign contributors to prevent public transportation. And it's a lot more expensive now than it would have been if we'd have kept what we already had and added to it. We were impressed in Switzerland with a couple we knew who lived in a little town. I don't think they had more than 500 people living there. They were serviced by two bus lines and two railroad lines. And the railroad lines really ran on time. And people who lived there didn't need cars. They could get anywhere they wanted to in Switzerland, go shopping, go to work, go whatever, using public transportation. My sister in Manhattan, she doesn't have a car. So it would have been possible to keep what we had along that line. But I don't know whether we can develop the political interest in spending the money that would now take in order to build subways under cities and all other kinds of things that you'd have to do. Well, we've got some other problems also in terms of just the convenience and inconvenience of these things. One is the range of the car. How far can you drive it? And as we know, batteries in flashlights and our smartphones, they tend to degrade over time. So you may be told that the Chevy Bolt has a 250-mile range, and we'll start with that, but then deal with how is that going to decline. It's going to decline over time as the battery degrades. It's recommended that you don't keep it charged under 20% or over 80%. Well, you've thereby eliminated 40% of your supposed range from a fill-up from 250 miles. Now we're down to 150 miles. And other things that will tend to shorten the range are if you use fast chargers instead of slow chargers, and if you drive at 85 miles an hour. Cold weather, one fellow reported a 35% drop in his range when winter came. Terrain you're on, if you're driving in the mountains, obviously you're not going to get the range you would on driving across Kansas, or if you're using a heater or air conditioner that's drawing off the same battery. So there's this question about range. Then there's the matter of the recharging, and this also affects those who are not used to buying new cars. You really need a dedicated, convenient charging station that you know you can get to and use with ease every day that's very close to your home or very close to your work or both. I'll come back to that in a second. And then there's the question of availability of these charging stations on a cross-country trip. You're going to need to plan that out ahead of time. If you do run out of charge, nobody can bring you a can of electricity that you pour into the engine like the can of gasoline, and you have to plan your route and so forth. If you're going to use chargers on the road, you're going to find out that there are various providers of electric power, and for each of them, you're required a smartphone app and an account so you can charge the electricity, that particular one. And the amount of time it takes to charge, if you're charging every night, overnight, you don't care if it takes 12 or 14 hours to charge it. But if you're on the road, you do. And if you use the fastest charge that Tesla has, that's still going to take 30 to 45 minutes. And they say, well, I can go into a restaurant and have a meal. Yeah, you can do that, but you want to have a meal that often as you drive down the road? So I think there are some problems with that, which sort of brings us to our third and final point of what's the future of these things? Where are they going? And who are they going to work for? And I think the best bet really is with organizations that have fleets of vehicles where they now already have a parking lot where they put all of them at night. And all they'll have to do is install a charging station for each one and then give them a slow charge overnight. And then they're all ready to go again in the morning. And that would include a company like Amazon with its trucks that deliver the Amazon Prime packages. They're going to be ordering 100,000 electric trucks. The United Parcel Service, the post office, state and federal government agencies, corporations, the University of Iowa, which already has some charging stations for it, or taxi cabs. And so that's where I think they'd be most useful.
So you see charging stations perhaps replacing the currently ubiquitous filling station and gas station, and your local deli mart combination charging station would be a wave of the future.
Yes, and that's part of Biden's proposal. He's proposing that we put, I believe, $179 billion into electric vehicles, and that includes building 500,000 charging stations across the country. Again, that will be very helpful in urban areas, but you're still going to have the problem of finding charging stations if you want to use your electric vehicle to drive across country.
What about investment in more public transportation, rail? Do you see that as a political necessity that might drive some public policy towards supporting that option?
Well, part of what I'm trying to encourage with what I've been writing and with this interview is to get people to think about that more. You know, why is it that we're going so strong for electric vehicles? That may be the right thing to do, but I think we really do need to think it through further than we have. And whether you're trying to move people or whether you're trying to help with the climate change problems, that you really do have to think about public transportation alternatives, people working from home and so forth. There are a lot of ways to help with climate change and with transport burdens of transportation other than electrical vehicles. I think for individuals, as distinguished from people who are operating dozens of vehicles every day, I think will make sense, even given the cars today, let alone the ones that will be available 15 years from now as electric vehicles, will be for people who not only can afford to buy a new car, but have also already afforded to buy a house with a garage. And they can set up a charging station in their garage and just use their car for commuting to and from work, for driving around town, running errands, that sort of thing, where you don't have to worry about finding a charge station. You don't have to worry about the range of miles you can drive, because anything you're going to drive in a day is well within the range of your car. But to do that, you have to have a house and a garage. It's going to pretty much exclude most apartment dwellers, let alone the homeless. And so we still got this problem of the 75% of people who, like myself, buy used cars rather than the new cars, or live in places where there simply aren't available any kind of a dedicated charging station. The workplaces could provide that also. They could assign parking places, and every parking place could have a charging station. That might work for some people. Or if people use the electric vehicles a second car, people who already have a couple that already has two cars, you know, one for each of them, and when it comes time to trade in one of those, they could very well make it an electric vehicle and keep the other gasoline car. They would be cutting their emissions in half that way, and they'd have the gasoline car for trips that are beyond the range of their electric vehicle, and then use the electric vehicle for the local driving around it for errands and going to and from work and whatever. That way they could lease it, which I've thought I would never think of leasing a car now, but if I were to get an electric car, I think I would very much want to run the numbers on leasing, because I don't think that you want to buy a used electric vehicle that you're immediately going to have to put an additional $5,000 to $15,000 into to get a new set of batteries. And I don't think you're going to want to buy one and then in 10 years have to buy a new set of batteries. Where if the numbers work out all right for this couple, I think they might want to consider leasing, and then they can turn it in and get the improvements in technology and get a car with a new set of batteries, probably greater range and so forth over time. But that's beyond where we are now for sure.
Well, we're coming close to the end of our time today, and you have given us a lot to think about. And I hope we can continue this conversation in another time.
I think I can wrap it up very quickly. I think EVs are already useful in some situations. They'll become more so over time. We need to do more thinking about it. How will they make our lives better? Are the benefits worth the cost and trouble? How much impact will they have on climate change? And as many people describe their relationships on Facebook, quote, it's complicated. They're not an immediate universal panacea solution for global warming. So as Rachel Maddow says, watch this space.
We've been talking with Professor Nicholas Johnson, Professor Emeritus of the University of Iowa Law School. He has written on many topics, and you can find his work on nicholasjohnson.org, from DC to Iowa.blogspot.com, and columnsofdemocracy.com. Nicholas Johnson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.